A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Nikki Bandini.
On this edition, from last year's runaway champions to middling mid-tablers this year, is this the same Napoli? And how do they fall from glory so quickly into the crisis that they find themselves in now? Also, what do they want and when do they want it? Will Bayern Munich get what they want in this transfer window, or will it be a case of you can't always get what you want this January? And there is no transfer talk without a mention of the will he or won't he at the end of the season. Everybody wants to know where the world's greatest footballer probably ends up eventually. Only Mbappe knows for sure. But we've got a good guess, and we'll tell you why. Crisis at Napoli, from Serie A champions to where they are now. How do we even begin to explain this, Nikki?
Yeah, I guess we've talked about this a little bit on the show before, and I'm always slightly wary of repeating myself too much. But the big answer is, I would say, poor leadership from the owner, Aurelio De Laurentiis. And you saw the cracks start to appear even before they'd won the title. That's the extraordinary thing about Napoli winning the title. They didn't do it for 33 years. And then when they did it so confidently. They did it so dominantly that the title was effectively sewn up weeks before the end of the season. And it was a question of when rather than if. And I think in that period, you already saw things start to go awry, sort of. Some of them on the pitch, Kvitch Kvaratskhelia stopped scoring goals, but the more profound ones at a boardroom level, but I suppose at a coaching level, really, because it's the manager Luciano Spalletti, the conductor, the orchestrator of this great project, refuses to accept. Essentially, Napoli had an option to extend his contract by 1 year, which they triggered, and Spalletti said, "Well, I'm not happy about this. I've just led you to a league title. I deserve to be given a whole new contract that reflects what I've achieved." And that unhappiness led to, by the end of the season, such a breakdown in relationship between Luciano Spalletti, the manager, and Aurelio De Laurentiis, the owner, that even though the extension had officially been triggered, they both sort of said, "Look, are we happy to just walk away from this and call it the end of this story?" And they agreed that they would. And Spalletti, who has always had this other side to him that's happy to be going and working on his farm, went and worked in his farm for a bit.
But that was about the manner as well, wasn't it? It was about the way that he just got a letter through the post saying, "Your contract has been extended."
Exactly. It wasn't negotiation. It wasn't talked about. It was just, "We're just going to do this unilaterally." And I think Spalletti felt disrespected.
"We're doing you a favour."
Yeah. And I think that was, rather than it being the whole symptom I'm just going to mix my metaphors horribly because I've got a completely different metaphor I was about to go for. I think that was to some degree the canary in the coal mine, because it wasn't just that you were treating your manager like that. It was that you were treating your whole club like that. And the sporting director, Cristiano Giuntoli, also leaves in the summer because his work hasn't been taken seriously. And you've seen that repeatedly in comments from De Laurentiis since, talking about, oh, well, Giuntoli doesn't deserve all this credit for signing Kvitic, Kvaratskhelia. That was all me. You know, that was all these things he's been talking about publicly, always trying to reduce the amount of credit that he gives to his employees. And I think now you're seeing the next step in that in the last few weeks, which is players clearly feel the same way as well. And there was quite a lot of noise recently about Victor Osimhen signing a new contract, which has been brought back up in the last few days by the agent of Kvitic, Kvaratskhelia, because Kvaratskhelia has not had a new contract. He was actually awarded as player of the season in Serie A last season. And his agent has come out and said, well, Osimhen only got this new contract, everybody knows, because it's a setup to make sure that the club gets the fee they want for him when he's sold to Saudi Arabia in the summer. Everyone knows he's going to Saudi Arabia. Meanwhile, none of the rest of us have had our new contracts. And actually, that story has had a lot of attention because Osimhen fired back, called the agent a dumbass. That's his word. I'm not saying that
myself. Actually, that was a polite way of what he said, wasn't it?
He said some other things, yeah. But he did use the word dumbass to say it correctly rather than dumbass. But in the meantime, actually, even before that, you had the agent for Politano and Di Lorenzo, two of the Italian members of the team who are well established there. Actually, a few days before all that happened, had been in the press saying, where are our new contracts? Why is the league title not being sort of acknowledged, the fact that everything that's been achieved here? And his client, Politano, has an offer on the table from Saudi to go next summer. And he was sort of saying pretty publicly, look, if we don't get better terms, we're going to have to think pretty seriously about this. So I think that feeling that ownership has not rewarded the league title, has not acknowledged how extraordinary it was, has been presumptuous. I think that's at the core of everything that's going wrong in Naples, is that breakdown between ownership and everyone, basically.
So if this is a game of coaching past the parcel, as Matt Sarri just had the parcel in his hand when the music stops at the wrong time, is that what's happened? Because Matt Sarri's been in charge for 9 games. They've lost 6 of them. Now, obviously, it seemed a weird appointment when he arrived in the first place, presumably as a sort of stopgap until they get Antonio Conte or Igor Tudor or whoever they might hope for next season. But I guess there's 2 things. Firstly, there's still stuff to do this season. The top 4 is not impossible, but they're letting it slip through their fingers as stands at the moment. It's a very competitive race for the top 4. But bringing back Matt Sarri when he's not been at the club and not really done much since he's left the club the first time a decade ago, is this the latest De Laurentiis misstep, or is he just unfortunate to be the man in possession while all this other stuff is going on?
Well, so obviously De Laurentiis had hired Rudy Garcia to replace Spalletti, which...
Talking of missteps.
Everyone said at the time, that's an interesting appointment. He hasn't... Similar to Matt Sarri, he hasn't really been on top of his game, it hasn't felt like, for a long time. Of course, he has coached in Italy before, was part of the case made at the time, and he did lead Roma to second place a couple of seasons in a row, and they were competitive in that time. He did do an okay job at Roma, I would say, at a time when the squad was very strong. But that appointment, De Laurentiis has almost tried to wash his hands of by saying, ironically, given everything I just said, he said after firing Garcia, I should have got rid of him on day one, because he came in here and he didn't acknowledge the what he was inheriting, didn't talk about the work that had been done before him. And I should have recognized that and said, you're not the right person, and got rid of him there and then. So interesting that De Laurentiis, who has upset his own staff by himself not perhaps giving enough reward to the people who achieve these things, use that as his reason for why Garcia didn't work out. But yes, he hires Mazzari, who is this, in Italy the word they use is traghettatore, a ferryman. It's, you know, someone who's going to take you safely to the other side and then thank you very much and we'll be on our way. So the idea was he would steer them to the end of the season, and instead the boat is taking on so much water that it's almost hard to see how it's recoverable this season now. You talked about being down to ninth in the table. Andy, they haven't scored in four games.
Yeah.
Which when you think they scored 77 goals, I think, in Serie A last season, is almost the most extraordinary part of it. Throw in the fact that your best goal scorer, Victor Osimhen, is now off to the Africa Cup of Nations. And this is a real profound crisis. They got knocked out to the Coppa Italia by Frosinone, conceding four goals. They got beaten 3-0 by Torino. And that's like the reverse of this conversation about how can Napoli not be scoring goals? Torino never score goals. Torino have scored 18 goals all season, including the three they scored against Napoli. So to lose 3-0 to them is extraordinary. I don't mean to be disrespectful to Torino because they're actually a very competitive team, but they're a grind you to a 0-0 draw competitive, not a humiliate you like that competitive. It's collapsing so fast that even though the expectations for Mazzarri were pretty modest, you're asking the question of, can this hold? Can this go to the end of the season? Because, okay, they've already got enough points that relegation is essentially unthinkable. They'd have to almost lose 19 games in a row to get relegated, and that's not going to happen. But the Champions League is already running away from them quickly. The title isn't even a conversation. And when you've then got your two most important players, Kvaratskhelia and Osimhen, publicly at odds, perhaps not themselves speaking, but their agents speaking in this, well, one agent speaking and Osimhen speaking back to that agent in such a hostile way, it's reached a level that I think a lot of us couldn't even have imagined it going to, even as we saw things going badly. And yes, I think Mazzarri's been unfortunate to some degree, because a lot of this is things that, foundations that were terrible before he showed up. I also think he's not authoritative enough at this point in his career to walk into that changing room and say, everyone needs to shut up and listen to me and I can get us at least back on steady footing.
It's funny, if the timelines were different, you could imagine Rino Gattuso thinking, oh, yes. Conflict, open warfare. Yeah. Quite fancy this.
That's it. I don't know if anyone could. I really don't. And this sort of story bubbled up again because he was just at the Torino Napoli game, which is a bit of a red herring because Conte has gone to other games, but Antonio Conte was at the Torino Napoli game. And so people look at Antonio Conte and go, is that who Napoli could turn to? And it makes sense on paper because Italian clubs can't hire from other Italian, well, Serie A clubs can't hire from other Serie A clubs during the season. You can't coach for more than one Serie A team in the same season. So Conte is about as high level a manager as you could think of right now who's available.
But he wouldn't want it now, would he? Surely.
I don't think he'd want it now.
No.
I don't think it would be a particularly positive mix between him and De Laurentiis. But I do wonder if that is the one profile of manager who might be able to walk into the changing room and say to all these players who are now not cooperating, not doing all the things he did last season, everyone be quiet and listen to me because I actually know how to get us back on track. It almost needs that big of an ego for anyone to listen to him. Whether it would work, I don't know. Whether he would take it, I'm skeptical. But I think that's the only sort of, the only scenario in which you can almost even imagine that replacing Mazzarri would do anything at all.
That 3-0 defeat to Torino should have been something of a fairy tale for a new signing. I read your piece in The Guardian about it. It turned out to be a nightmare for Pasquale Mazzocchi, who is a hometown boy, as it were, and got his big chance to play for his home team in Serie A, and it went all right, to say the least.
Yeah, it's such a sort of a crazy story, really, because Mazzocchi, he grew up in a suburb of Naples, had five siblings and sort of really one of those tough upbringings. And then when he got his chance to go and play football at 11 years old, Benevento, it was an hour's drive away and he did it and was seeing his parents once a month and goes on to succeed, have a career in professional football, but that career takes him far away. He, you know, again, 11 years old, he's already living away from home and he doesn't come back. He goes up to the north of Italy. He plays for six different clubs. Finally, he comes back a couple of years ago to Salernitana, who is not quite back home, but it's half an hour's drive away from Naples. So it's just down the coast. And funnily enough, as fate would have it, he ends up being captain of the Salernitana team that drew with Napoli last season to stop them from winning the league at home. Now, of course, they won the league anyway. That was always on the cards, but it meant they didn't get to have that celebration at home. So he actually became something of a villain to Napoli fans at that time, and had Napoli fans on his socials saying, oh, you're not, you can't be a true Neapolitan. A true Neapolitan would have refused to play. So he's gone through all of this as a kid who grew up there. And finally this January, Napoli, and you have to wonder, of course, if because football decisions, I do think, get influenced sometimes in this really incidental way, if his performance that day was remembered by people at Napoli and they said, okay, so they signed him this January and they needed some extra depth at the wing-back positions, which he can offer. And he comes on at half-time against Torino for his debut. They're already 1-0 down. And within 5 minutes, he gets sent off for, I mean, it's a terrible challenge. Studs into...
Because it was upgraded by the referee from a yellow card to a red card.
Yeah, so yellow at first, then VAR took a look, and it is a red card. It's a very dangerous challenge with studs up. So quite a sort of story for Madsocki personally, as you say. Should have been his happy moment, coming all that full circle back to play for his hometown club. Instead gets sent off within 5 minutes.
But of course Napoli would have known what they were getting with Madsocki, because I think you used the word tenacious in your article. He's a hard man. That's
yeah,
what they want,
oh yeah. He's, and that's I think exactly the profile of player they're looking at. Look, Napoli, he was sort of sold as... the first of many signings this January. I should say, in all of that long dialogue I had about Napoli, about the structure of the club and things going wrong, one thing I didn't mention, which is also really important, is they did sell their best defender, Kim Min-jae, to Bayern Munich, and that was unavoidable. He had a release clause, but without question, that has hurt them as well. Their defence is less solid than it used to be.
But is it that he went or that they didn't replace him?
Well, that's exactly really? The point. Yeah, they sold one of the best defenders in Serie A last season. He was really excellent last season, and they haven't replaced him. And so that is also on the list of how this could be solved. They're trying to sign replacements. They actually were in for Radu Dragosin, who of course chose to sign for Tottenham instead.
I guess the thing we have to say with Madsocki, though, to finish, is the fact that Leo Messi was sent off 2 minutes into his Argentina debut. So maybe it's a good omen.
What next for Napoli?
Well, funnily enough, next for Napoli is Salernitana, Madsocki's former club. But what next in terms of rescuing the season? January is an interesting time. We'll see who they can and can't sign. At the moment, it feels like they're being beaten to the punch on a lot of players they wanted. Lazar Samardzic is another player they've been after. And with sort of, I don't know if it feels almost deliberate timing, stories have popped up immediately saying that Juventus, where Cristiano Giuntoli, the sporting director who was chased out of time by De Laurentiis, might also be trying to steal Samardzic from under their noses. So it would not be an auspicious start to the transfer window if they go after Dragosin, don't get him, go after Samardzic, don't get him. But in theory, what next for them is try to fix this with some January transfers. For now, they've insisted Mazzari's not being replaced. But what next in the next few weeks and months if Champions League football really starts to run away, I couldn't say.
Meanwhile, in the Bundesliga, Bayern must be so used to getting what they want, not least in a January transfer window, but perhaps not this time, Andy.
Well, I guess what they really want in a January transfer window, or what any club of that stature normally wants in a January transfer window, Dalton, is a bit of peace and quiet. You know, you expect to have done your job so well in the summer transfer window, and you expect everything to have gone so well in the first half of the season, that you would think, oh, while all these peasants are scrabbling about for scraps, we've just got the squad we want already. And that is patently not the case for Bayern. Now, there are two angles to this. Firstly, they're still recovering from the Salihamidzic Khan reign, which went really awry, and they got rid of those both at the end of last season. Brought in the cavalry in the shape of Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge to sort of pave the way to a new era. Now they have got a new sporting director in Christoph Freund, but they're looking at getting someone else in there as well. They continue to be linked with Max Eberl, who left Leipzig earlier in the season because Leipzig felt he was fishing elsewhere for jobs. you know, join the dots there is pretty easy. He did a great job at Borussia Mönchengladbach before, and Bayern were interested in him from going back to that time. So if something happened there, it wouldn't be a massive surprise. Not to make the difference on this transfer window. But then you look at, and we've talked about it again and again on here, the fact that Harry Kane, as well as being amazing in this first part of the season, he's papered over a lot of cracks. A lot of cracks. Not just by his goals and performances, but making the players around him better. But they're still not top of the league, partly due to how brilliant Bayer Leverkusen have been, of course. Now, talking of strikers, whether that can hold. Now, Victor Boniface has been wiped out not only of the can, but until the start of April with that serious muscle injury. That could have a massive influence on the title race. But in terms of Bayern going where they want to go, it's not just about winning the title, is it? It's about winning the title and the Champions League. Of course, they're knocked out of the DFB Pokal. They can't do the treble. But they're squarely looking at the Champions League. And they're not going to win it with the team they've got at the moment. They're not going to win it, not just because they haven't got that defensive midfielder. Of course, we know they went for João Palhinha and didn't quite get there. Got him in the kit, but didn't get the ink on the contract. But what they've done in the transfer window so far, or what they've tried to do in the transfer window so far, has really underlined that they feel they've got holes elsewhere. So that defensive midfielder, whether it's going to get done or not, they're getting in Eric Dier. He's arrived in Munich as we're on air at the moment. He's going to sign that contract imminently. I think it's a great signing for them. It's been in the pipeline for a while. I think the fact that he can play centre-back and that defensive midfielder is super important for them. And I know people will look at what he's done or not done for Tottenham in the last little while. It's just he's not a suitable player for Tottenham anymore. Bayern play differently. And the fact is he will be able, A, to be covered by the greater pace of Dio Upamecano if he's playing at centre-back. And B, if he's playing in that defensive midfield role, they want him to be deep. And they want him to just feed the players in front of them. That, you know, they want a sitter. They would have liked, I think they would have liked Manuel Ugarte if they didn't get João Palhinha. Of course, we knew they were in for Declan Rice, etc. But I think the fact that Dier can do a couple of different roles and he's cheap, because they spent a lot of money on Harry Kane, let's not forget that, is really important. But if you look at, well, you talked about Dragosin before, Nicky, they went in for him. They went in for him quite late, which is why he didn't go there, which again makes me think, well, A, they've got a problem. They're fishing in the same pool because they're looking for the same sort of cover in the same sort of positions as equivalent clubs like Paris Saint-Germain, for example. They've got a lot of similar targets and they're working out. There have been a lot of talks between Bayern and PSG to work out how they might mutually sort of horse trade. But the fact that they went in so late for Dragosin, it doesn't suggest organisation and a strategy, does it?
No, I think sort of interesting what they're doing in general. This Eric Dier signing, who sounds like it's quite likely to be on the cards with Dragosin not coming, feels like perhaps quite a useful fit given what you just said about the defensive midfield situation. Obviously, they've been trying this situation with Goretzka and Kimmich and it hasn't always quite worked. And I feel like with Dier, you've got the option to put him there. But in the first instance, you think he's going to plug that gap at centre-back, especially with Kim Min-jae playing the Asian Cup.
Yeah.
So they have got needs that, as you say, feel like they're about to become more prominent. Dragosin, I think, would have been a really nice signing. I do rate Dragosin. I think I like him, not necessarily because he's a finished article, and I think that's worth saying as well. You wouldn't necessarily have got someone who's going to step in and play to the level that Kim has. But I think he's this really he's a really one of those really interesting stories of someone who you can see the growth in. You know, when he went to Genoa a couple of years ago, they'd just gone down to Serie B and he'd been at Juventus, been in the Next Gen project, and he'd gone on loan to Salernitana and Sampdoria and Serie A.
Because he was really rated as a kid, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he wasn't sure about going to Genoa. And as the story goes, Giorgio Chiellini basically said to him, don't worry about it, you know, you're a really good player. You're going to succeed wherever you go. Just go and play concentrate on your football. And Chiellini has been this sort of mentor to him because they worked together at Juventus, and so it's proved. It, the first season there, he was playing on a Genoa team who were really too good for Serie B, and he was playing as this sort of very bring the ball out from defence kind of defender because they had so much possession. I think he actually had something wild, like the third most passes in all of Serie B last season. I'm not sure if it was third, but it's certainly in the top five. And then this season you see a new version required because Genoa aren't dominant in Serie A. They have to play without the ball. And he's shown that he can be, first of all, absolutely dominant in the air, which he really is impressive in the air. But also because he plays in this back three and switches out from the middle to the right of the back three in different games. Really sort of aggressive, doesn't dive into tackles aggressive, but gets on top of, when he's out of those wider positions, gets on top of wingers early before they can get the chance to run at him. And there's been a lot of talk about, oh, when you look at the numbers, only one opponent's dribbled past him all season, which is true. But the reason is because he barely lets anyone have a chance to dribble at him because he's always on them. And
it sounds exactly what Ange Postecoglou wants.
Yeah, he's a real sort of in your face. And I think he talks about that. You know, he says he's taken that from Chiellini. He talked about working with Bonucci, with De Ligt, with Chiellini and all these different things he saw in all of them. But Chiellini's the one he called his idol. And I think he's got that sort of that Chiellini aggression in him, which isn't I'm always going to leave my feet and jump into things. I know Chiellini gets celebrated for those moments, but it's a sort of willingness to take the first step and be aggressive on someone's touch. I do think he's a really a really interesting player.
I think what you could have won part is a huge part, especially when I guess to me, Dragosin has clearly been scouted by Spurs. To Bayern, it felt like to me that they were trying to take an opportunity. Like, you've got someone out there who genuinely need the money. Mm-hmm. There's enormous upside to him. He's not massively expensive, and there's not a lot of great central defenders out there. Because what they've been doing before then, whether it's Dier, whether you go back to autumn, where the only reason they abandoned re-signing Jerome Boateng is because of the protests from fans about the off-field stuff involving Boateng. They tried to sign Sokratis before, a very aging Sokratis, before he decided to go to Betis instead. And they're not the only defensive holes they've got.
Well, we've talked about Bayern's defensive problems before, defensive midfield problems, obviously. What is the point to all of those attempts at signing players that you've mentioned? What is the point? Is it for the Champions League? Because it seems to me that there are two Bayerns. There's the Bayern in the Champions League, and then there's a Bayern in the Bundesliga that has won the Bundesliga over and over and over again. But interesting enough, in the last three seasons, they haven't won anything other than the Bundesliga, even domestically.
Yeah, I think that's a massive deal, Dotton. Absolutely massive deal. And you've got to feel at least competitive in the Champions League, I think. And of course, they shouldn't have won the Bundesliga last season. I think you look at this season, if Leverkusen played as they played in the first half of the season, you could easily see them winning the Bundesliga. Because Bayern haven't done a lot wrong results-wise. There are holes to pick tactically and shape-wise and in terms of the performances. But, you know, the results are good. You know, there's no real argument with that. Whether Leverkusen can maintain that, A, over a whole season, B, whether they're missing players, when they're missing players at Cannes, and of course the fact that Boniface is going to be out for a lot of the rest of the season, that puts a lot of pressure on Patrick Schick, who has looked good, really good actually, since he's come back from injury. Expecting him to carry them through the rest of the season is asking a lot. I think so. Maybe that changes their plans. But yeah, you're right. It's about what they are able to do in the Champions League. And I think even you look at the group where they won it quite easily. They took 6 points off Galatasaray, and they were lucky to. They conceded 3 goals against the not very good Manchester United at home. They were given a right going over by FC Copenhagen in Denmark in that away leg. And like I said, it's not just the defensive midfielder position. It's not just the centre-backs. It's the full-backs as well. I think, look, Alphonso Davies is not what he was going back to when they last won it in 2020. And, you know, they're deciding on whether they're going to pay him as much as he wants to keep him, which is fueling the talk of him going to Real Madrid, the story that really won't go away. And then you've got on the other side, Nusayir Mazraoui, who a lot of people believe is not really good enough to play be the starting right back for Bayern. And I wouldn't massively disagree with that. So their other top target this transfer window has been Nnoddy Mukiele, who Tuchel likes, who Bayern like, who they've seen perform very consistently in the Bundesliga, but has not really found a slot at PSG. But he can play right back, centre back, left back in a three. And he's a really great athlete. So you've got all of those things. I guess the question is, because PSG are trying to use it as a way to leverage, can we get Joshua Kimmich? Nothing doing at the moment, but, you know, they want him. They'd be daft not to try. It seems that Kimmich would prefer actually now to go to PSG than Barcelona. Barcelona, the other big club who are interested in him. And definitely, if you're buying, you'd prefer to sell him to PSG than Barcelona, because you might actually get some money for it as well, which would be a plus, rather than how about a long-term loan where we pay you sometime in 2029? Is that okay with us? Maybe 5 years after he's retired? But I think if you're PSG, you're looking at Bayern's needs, and as I said, looking at their level and thinking, do we really want to strengthen them? Because they're at a sort of almost equivalent point in the Champions League. But Bayern, I think you could say, are a little bit ahead, because PSG have undergone more of a profound reconstruction and are still. But unless I was getting something back, I wouldn't be giving them Mukiele and solving one of their problems for them. Why would you do that? A team that is trying to win the Champions League but is not one of the absolute favourites for it. No, I wouldn't be strengthening them.
And by the way, history will record that Bayern did win the Bundesliga last season. History doesn't have time for the caveat.
No, it doesn't.
They shouldn't have.
It doesn't.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We've already mentioned PSG, and well, it's a transfer window, so we've got to bring them into this conversation again. Isn't it every single transfer window we have to mention Kylian Mbappe? It depends on Kylian Mbappe. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's not going anywhere this transfer season. This transfer window, we know that. But people are already looking ahead at the summer transfer, and we still don't know what's going to happen to this, probably the world's best player. We don't know where he's going to end up, whether he's going to stay at PSG, as the directors of PSG are planning on him doing, or whether he's going off to Real Madrid or anywhere else.
Yeah, you say he's not going anywhere this transfer window, and I think you're right. But I think it's worth saying that even this transfer window, there has been offers from Saudi to try and make it happen, because they know that PSG would rather not let him just walk out the door without getting a transfer fee for him. But it seems pretty clear that he's not interested in making that move to Saudi, and that leaves open this interesting question of where he does want to go. And I think it seems, I think it's reached a really sort of intriguing point, this whole situation for Mbappe, because I don't get the impression that his sort of core preference to go to Real Madrid has changed. I think he's wanted to go to Real Madrid. He still wants to go to Real Madrid. He did, of course, turn down Real Madrid to sign that contract extension in the past. But I think the sort of idea in his head that eventually that would be the move he made has always been there. But it also feels like, oddly, where you would expect the closer you got to the end of this contract, the desire to sign him to increase, everyone's urgency to increase, it feels like the opposite is happening. That actually now, finally, he's available for anybody. That the clamour has not gone. He's still one of the best players in the world, but has diminished a bit. It feels like PSG are no longer willing to bend over as far backwards as they would have been to keep him. And Real Madrid, perhaps partly because of having to renovate their own stadium as well, and the cost they've got associated with that, not wanting to break their financial structure, being able to turn profits, are also just being a bit more cautious. Now, I'm not certain how far that will extend. I think that Florentino Perez wants this one in his name. He wants to be able to, at the end of this, say, I got Mbappe. But it feels as though maybe the various stories of, I don't know, just being a slightly difficult character have had a little bit of an impact. And perhaps it feels like, perhaps it's not even that, perhaps it's just sort of politicking and Madrid not wanting to overpay. But it feels like the market has cooled a tiny bit for Mbappe.
It feels like Nikki is being extremely polite, because there's another reason that you have, you believe that Real Madrid are somewhat reluctant to throw their hat into the ring so blatantly.
They don't want to look stupid.
Again.
I think, again. Because Florentino Perez and Real Madrid are not used to that. Mm. And obviously, when he didn't sign the first time, they thought they had him in the bag. So if we go back to last Sunday, this story broke in France that he's agreed to join Real Madrid this season. Now, of course, on Monday, the Mbappe camp come out and deny this. Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the president of PSG, gives this long interview to L'Equipe, says, I'm very confident of keeping him, etc., etc., etc. And it all feels quite choreographed. Obviously, the fact that even if he had agreed to go to Real Madrid, well, they thought he'd agreed before, going back nearly 2 years ago, going back a year and a half or so ago. So until he's actually there in the shirt, and I don't mean 12-year-old Kylian Mbappe in his bedroom, I mean 25-year-old Kylian Mbappe now, shaking hands with Perez, overlooking the pitch of the Bernabeu, it's not happened. And I do think it is down to just these two. Now, of course, there's been talk about, well, Premier League clubs could sweep in. But if you look at Arsenal, Liverpool, I think the feeling is, even with the riches of the Premier League, they've not quite got the money to make it happen. I think that the little bits coming from his camp about, oh yeah, he's really interested in these Premier League clubs, it's a bit like, it feels like LeBron James saying, oh, I'd love to play at Madison Square Garden every week. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to sign for the Knicks. No. I'm never going to sign for the Knicks. But it's a lovely idea, the sort of idea that I have when I'm channel flicking with my feet up in my front room. And I think actually LeBron James is quite a good comparison, because that is why there's so much talk about it at the moment. Like LeBron, every time Mbappe comes out and says something, he understands the weight of every word. Mm. He doesn't make idle chit-chat with journalists. Now, when he came out after they'd won the Trophée des Champions last week against Toulouse, which is a whole different story, when he became the highest scoring player ever at the Parc des Princes, when he came out into the mix zone where the players come and chat if they want to with journalists afterwards, Mbappe doesn't often stop there. So when he comes out and talks, it's like, right, okay, he's got something to say. And this is really what starts this story from last weekend about he's made a decision, because it feels that even though he's come out there and said, well, you know what, I don't have to make a decision till May. I haven't made a decision yet and I don't have to yet. There's still this feeling that a decision is imminent because he's come out and spoken. Now, the way it's being perceived in Spain is really interesting, because the first time it was all shirts off, flag waving, he's coming to us because we're the greatest club in the world. Ha! Have that, France. Have that, Paris. Whereas this time, it's like, God, this little squirt made us look a mug. Like, a lot of the Madrid press and the Madrid sympathetic press, let's be honest, feel like that. So you have guys like sort of trumpet blowers like Josep Pedrero, who does El Chiringuito, saying, well, maybe he shouldn't come. Maybe he shouldn't come. Maybe we should not want him, which is ludicrous. Mm-hmm. For the crime of deciding to stay at the club where he already was, his hometown club, there's this sense of, right, well, maybe he should be punished for that. Maybe we should give him less of a signing on fee. Maybe we should pay him less. And this is all ridiculous. One, because he was perfectly within his rights to do that. Two, because money's not going to affect his decision. If he goes to Real Madrid, he will get paid less than he gets paid at PSG. Mm. And that's why they feel confident, because in QSI's mind, money decides everything. And because, in terms of the squad construction, they have belatedly given Mbappe what he wants by shifting off Neymar and Messi.
In fact, they seem so confident that, Nicky, from the PSG president, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, it doesn't seem like they've got a plan B. From reading,
I definitely don't.
Well, he says he has a plan. This is, I'm quoting him literally. He says, I have a plan. I have a plan with Kylian, and I'll not enter into the details. I can only say that I'm not stressed on the Mbappe topic. Whereas we are very stressed on it.
I don't know what the plan can be for selling one of the worlds, or not selling, well, losing on a free transfer.
I don't know what the plan
can be. Plan B. I don't know what plan you can have to replace one of the world's best players. It's pretty much impossible to have a plan for that, short of you've somehow got up your sleeve, you're going to sign, I don't know, Erling Haaland from Manchester City. You're not going to replace his impact in the team. And I do think, of all the scenarios that seem plausible to me, and I've been wrong before, but him turning back now, having waived that massive loyalty bonus, which of course was part of their reconciliation, the getting through this season, because let's not forget, in the summer there was talk of, we're not going to let you play all season, you're going to waste your entire year going up to the Euros, which was also always a bit fanciful, but nevertheless, there were sort of conciliations made. I just can't see Mbappe going back on that. And similar to Andy, to me, it feels like the Premier League clubs are a convenient negotiation point for Mbappe. Oh, look, I have this interest in the Premier League. Everyone loves the Premier League. Everyone likes the Premier League money. I think it's just sort of nice for him to have that when he goes and talks to Real Madrid, because it makes him have some more leverage in terms of getting what he wants for a deal. And I also think you've made a really good point about how things are covered. Spanish media is so specific, football coverage. It's so very much based around not national coverage, but team coverage.
It's partisan.
Yeah. And those partisan voices are so often just frankly echoing the noises the club wants them to make. And this is a negotiation. It's a very public negotiation. But it does say something, I think, about, despite how I think about it, which is that I do expect in the end he ends up at Real Madrid. I think it does indicate some precariousness in that expectation that a deal doesn't get done right away. I think in another world, a different context to this whole story, the club is so eager to sign best player in the world available on a free transfer that they just, whatever you want, will make it happen. And I do think Real Madrid don't feel like that. I think they're confident that maybe Mbappe has lost a little bit of leverage and that they can play this game and not put everything he wants on the table right away?
I mean, I think when we're looking at their future plans, even if they don't want to think about their future plans, Don, it's fine, fingers in the ears, he's definitely going to stay. The fact that if he goes, it looks like he'll end up waiving that 80 million euro loyalty bonus.
Mm-hmm.
That has massive FFP implications for them, because all that stopped them doing what they want over the years is FFP. And, you know, arguably FFP hasn't quite stopped them doing what they've wanted over the years. But, you know, there are implications when it comes to rebuilding the squad, as they're continuing to do. And they're continuing to do it in the way that they think Mbappe would have wanted. You know, you look at, they've signed Beraldo, who's made an immediate impact coming over from Brazil. It still looks like they're going to sign Gabriel Machado, the defensive midfielder. Yes, defensive midfielder from Corinthians, even though he's broken his foot, so he can't play for the next 3 months. And they feel like the sort of Mbappe endorsed signings, you know, the sort of quality. It's like the equivalent, I suppose, of Real Madrid going off and signing Endrick. Like they did before with Rodrigo and Vinicius, like securing the future by getting the very best talent from, not just from Paris, but from all over the world. But they do have to think about this, because, as Nicky says, I agree with what Nicky says about how do they replace him on the pitch, how they replace him off the pitch. Mm. That's the difficult thing, because the danger with moving towards the Mbappe model of what he wants and moving and staying with what Paris were before. Now, we can sit here and sniff and say, oh, well, they were never going to win the Champions League with a front three of Neymar, Messi and Mbappe, because they don't do enough off the ball. But what if it's not about that? It's a bit like Juventus and Cristiano Ronaldo. What if it's not about that? What if it's putting your club in a different galaxy in terms of Facebook impressions, in terms of global engagement, in terms of marketing? If they replace Mbappe, they can't just replace him with a great player. That won't work. They've taken that decision to move away from Neymar. And Neymar, you can say, oh, well, maybe he didn't do what he should have in his career, and certainly not in his PSG career, even if the numbers were good. He never won the Champions League. He missed a lot of the big matches, etc., etc. When you walk down the street and you see someone at the bus stop wearing a Jordan PSG trackie, or when you're in the supermarket and you see someone pushing around a trolley wearing a PSG hoodie, who made that happen? Mm. It was Neymar. Mm. Neymar made that happen. So to maintain that sort of global profile, just going out and saying, you know what, we've seen this striker and we really like the look of him. If you buy in the next Gabriel Jesus, or, you know, whatever player you think fit, Kolo Muani is not going to do that for you.
Mm.
Gonçalo Ramos has scored a hat trick at the World Cup. He is not going to do that for you. So where do you spend that 80 million? Maybe the obvious one is Victor Osimhen. Maybe he is the one who can do that. But even it's arguable. Like, I don't think it's arguable that he would be a good replacement for Mbappe on the pitch. Definitely. I think that would be a pretty passable. I think you could sell that to the fans.
Yeah.
In terms of selling it to the world, would Osimhen, for example, be a suitable replacement for Mbappe?
I don't think there's a hard answer on that. I think that's such a good question. And I think my immediate answer is no. I'm a huge Victor Osimhen fan. I think he's such a brilliant player. But my immediate answer is no. First of all, there's something you can't replace, which is Mbappe is your local kid. He's the one who's you can put in the context of playing for Paris Saint-Germain, the greatest French player on the greatest French team. You can't replace that. I think Victor Osimhen fits into an interesting category, because not in any world does he have the kind of draw that Mbappe has right now. But of course, nobody starts with the profile. Everyone has to earn the profile. So at some point you have to do it. And do I think that he fits into a bracket of, if he went there and scored heaps of goals, which I think is very possible, and took Paris Saint-Germain places they hadn't been before, could he become that sort of star? I think that's plausible to me.
I guess as well, if I'm in a marketing suite overlooking the pitch at the Parc des Princes, mm-hmm. and I've got my flip chart. I'm writing Africa on it in big letters.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And they're always thinking about the global picture.
Osimhen, part of the thing with Osimhen is Napoli, despite what a wonderful story they were last season, Napoli globally aren't sexy.
Like, yeah.
I think Naples is an incredible place to visit. It's such a wonderful football setting. But in terms of what you just talked about, the locations and places that build your Instagram set, your followings, all those, it should be, frankly, because Naples is beautiful, but it isn't. There are certain clubs that have that cachet, and so Osimhen can't have that until he's been to one of the places where that can happen.
I guess the question is, we can talk about Mbappe not arriving as that superstar, but that was fine because Neymar was there at the time.
Yeah.
So because of what Mbappe has become, you only need to replace Mbappe, but you need to replace Mbappe not with Mbappe as he arrived in 2017, but either Mbappe as he is now or Neymar when he arrived. You're looking for that Neymar replacement.
You see why we can't go through a transfer window without talking about Mbappe. It's time, both of you, to recommend a game of the week that we can enjoy this weekend. Who wants to go first? Andy, you happy?
Yeah, go on then. I am going to go for something from La Liga, despite the fact that the Spanish Supercopa is happening out of the country at the moment. Forget about that. The big one is going to be this Saturday, the Basque Derby, Athletic versus Real Sociedad. Athletic are absolutely on fire at the moment, in the top four now, taking advantage of Atletico's little slip in the first game of 2024. And despite the fact that Iñaki Williams has gone off to the African Cup of Nations, of course, with Ghana, his younger brother Nico is there holding the fort. They're brilliant to watch. They're absolutely gobbling points up at the moment. And it looks like being a real battle between them and Real Sociedad for the top four. Real Sociedad have been really, really impressive. They could do with strikers that score more regularly, for sure. But they have got them in the building. They just need them to get scoring, specifically Andre Silva, I think. But, you know, these are two absolutely terrific teams who should be exciting people. Real Sociedad were brilliant in the Champions League as well. So at the moment, you have Athletic in fourth, Real Sociedad in sixth. And given how much they put into the Champions League and their budget and resources, for them to be in six, I think is a great achievement, testament to the squad and, of course, the quality of their coach, Imanol. But they're 6 points behind, so they could really do with going to Bilbao and winning this. Not an easy task. But I think what will keep their spirits up, if they bring some food with them from San Sebastian, because San Sebastian has arguably got the greatest food in Spain.
Really?
Yeah. The pinchos there are amazing. It's like their form of tapas. Tapas on bigger plates, if you like. You go into the bar and you just hoke it all on your plate. For me, the absolute high point of that is squid ink black rice. Not sure if it's really suitable for the players. What you do, I think, is you take it on the coach and you say, if you win, if you get those 3 points we need, you get to eat this food on the way back. That'd motivate you, wouldn't it?
I'm scoring already. Oh my goodness. Yeah, what a time to have the Basque Derby as well.
I'm worried though, because I've always, when we've talked about food recommendations, thought of it from what I'm going to eat, not what the players are going to eat.
Exactly.
And if we're suggesting for the players, that's a whole dangerous game.
I'll be eating it on the team bus and going, this could be you on the way back.
Yeah.
We'll take enough.
Just chicken and rice is always the answer for the players.
You definitely got the memo though, in terms of food. For us, what are we eating?
What are we eating? Well, do you know, it's funny because I was going to say tortellini in brodo because it's cold at the moment and I want my favourite warming. Tortellini in brodo is tortellini in broth. It's a an Emilia-Romagna. Well, it's all over Italy, but it's very popular in Emilia-Romagna. And I was going to suggest a game featuring Sassuolo. So for me, that's always little meat parcels in nicely cooked pasta, and broth is always a nice way to eat on a cold winter night. But for the game, because a lot of people are going to see that it's Milan-Roma on Sunday night, and that's an obvious choice, but I don't think in good conscience I can tell people to watch Jose Mourinho games at the moment because they have been...
Bus stops.
Well, yeah, I suppose they've been interesting sometimes what's happening, not in the game, but the games themselves have been routinely dreadful. But I'm playing with fire because instead I'm going to suggest Juventus-Sassuolo. Now, Juventus also have not always been very entertaining. I do think they are... Well, on the surface, they might look similar to Roma teams trying to win games 1-0. They have more going on than Roma do by a lot. But
they're not trying it, they're doing it, aren't they? Yeah.
But the reason this game is interesting is because Juventus have only lost one game this season. Juventus have only conceded 12 goals all season, have lost one game this season, and it was to Sassuolo, and they lost 4-2. So Sassuolo, who also beat them last season, one of those teams who, despite being 14th in the table, I think have the potential to throw spanners in the works. Domenico Berardi, who has been linked to Juventus forever, was brilliant in that game against them earlier this season. So that's why I'm going for that one. And I was going with Tortellini and Brodo until I thought the last minute, just now, because I was saying about chicken and rice. Playing for Juventus this season, Weston McKennie's having a really nice bounce back season after the disaster at Leeds. I got to interview him recently for 8x8 magazine, and he was talking about food crimes because he famously on the All or Nothing series with Juventus horrified his Juventus teammates talking about putting ranch dressing on his pizza. But he says that all the foreigners at Juventus, he says you can't say it to the Italians, but all the foreigners love his idea of chicken, pesto and pasta together. Now, in Italy, you don't put chicken and pasta together. So if you're looking for a food crime to feel at one with Weston McKennie, there's your answer. If you want to keep a traditional, tortellini and brodo.
You're thinking of chicken and rice and I'm thinking of chicken tonight. I want some chicken tonight. It's probably lost on your younger lot, but that was a TV.
No, I remember that.
That's about it from us. Thank you for listening to On the Continent. Make sure that you join us again tomorrow, though, for Ask OTC, where we'll be answering all of your questions about the latest news from the world of European football. And do make sure to subscribe in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.